Good morning. This is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul.
Sorry.
Don't stop. Just keep going.
All right. Sounds good. So this is Gaming Perspectives with Saul.
And Jolene.
And today we're talking about paladins, about playing paladins, and all kinds of things that deal with that class.
So your GM or whoever you're playing with, your dungeon master, decides that it's time to make new characters, and you decide you want to make a paladin. Tell me what a paladin is.
I think paladins first appeared, I'm pretty sure paladins first appeared, let's say, in AD&D. In AD&D, back, I forget when it was first published. But Gary Gygax included them and rangers and stuff, and expanded the classes from the basic original D&D. So the paladin was kind of a special class because he needed the character. The player needed to roll really high certain kind of stats. And because back then you used the random method, there weren't a lot of paladins in many games because it was very difficult to get those characteristics that you needed to roll. And it was random. So there was no point buy system like there is today. So if you want to be a paladin, you had to be really lucky or a forgiving GM, right? So like one of the things you needed for a paladin was a really high charisma, which was 17. Which is pretty high out of 3 6-sided dice that you're rolling.
Yeah, that means you have to have 2 6s and a 5.
Yeah, 2 6s and a 5. Yes. Sorry, my math isn't so good really early in the morning. So yeah, so and not only that, but you had to have like a higher wisdom. You had to have certain strength and all these other things. So it was a very difficult class to be able to roll and play. And on top of that, playing a paladin could be kind of difficult because paladins live strict code, and depending on how the GM really wanted you to play that code, it could be a difficult class to play and difficult for you to play that character with other players, right, and other characters, because sometimes paladins would get in the way of doing what needed to be done because they had to be lawful good at the same time.
So historically, a paladin is like a knight. I think they came about during Charlemagne's court. Probably the idea. The Song of Roland is where I first remember seeing them. The knight that's a holy warrior is the idea. I've always thought that paladins are a really hard class to play because how can you be lawful good all the time? And I mean, obviously you have to be if you're a paladin, but I've only seen one person do it well, one of our friends. And I was impressed with that because I wouldn't be able to do that. That's why I play chaotic, because chaotic is easier to play. Because what if you don't want to be good that day?
Well, you know, Jolene's right. Gary Gygax, who came up with this class, obviously knew, had studied history and real history and mythical history is what we're talking about here with Charlemagne's court. Charlemagne was a real person, but at the same time, there's a lot of mythical qualities about his kingdom, about his reign. So he had this group of paladins, and I think
just to be clear, Charlemagne was a real person, and there's historical qualities about his reign, just so everybody's clear on that.
But there's some fantastical things, right? You know, because
the Song of Roland is a story,
right? And so what I was going to say is that paladin comes from a Latin word that means either servant or government official. So obviously Gary Gygax had read the stories of read the history of Charlemagne and thought this would be a good thing to add to D&D because people wanted to play knights. I mean, that's one of the biggest fantasy tropes out there is, what is it?
Being a knight.
Yes, being a knight. I'm thinking about King Arthur. King Arthur and his knights.
Knights of the Round Table.
Knights of the Round Table. Some people say that that's kind of patterned after Charlemagne.
Yes, but I believe that it was a Welsh king or a Welsh guy that was actually King Arthur, where he comes from, the stories. So it could have been right before Charlemagne.
Well, what I'm saying is they possibly could have used the same stories and attributed to...
Yes. But other knights, Knights of the Templar, the Crusaders, the idea of the Holy Warrior, it can be in all different forms. When you're playing it as a character, it's really hard and can cause a lot of problems within your party if there's somebody who isn't going to let you kill the orc or something like that, because it's, or there's somebody who has to kill the orc because that's part of his structure.
Jolene's alluding to this. I think we shared the story about the orc prisoner and how it created strife within the party, because at one point somebody said, well, if you give us information, we'll let you go. But the paladin, who was, you know, had a higher calling to smite all evil, said, we can't let him go. And it started the argument, right, of player, character versus character, about ideology and about, you know, what word people should follow. And so, you know, and so it was kind of interesting. And at the same time, you know, like I said, it could cause party strife or friction between players and characters.
But historically, paladins in the real world, I wouldn't really call them paladins, but knights or holy warriors are always going to cause problems in the real world, because the crusaders went through, and especially the first ones they went through, they just killed the Muslims to get to Jerusalem. And that wasn't right. They didn't ask them questions or anything. They had a holy calling to do this.
Right. So I think Jolene's right. I think we're hitting on a certain aspect of paladins and conviction that depending on whose side you're on, right? If you're on the side of the Templars or the Knights that actually went on the First Crusade and subsequent Crusades, you think that they're doing a religious or the right thing, right? They're going to reclaim Jerusalem and all these other things, right? But if you're already living there, and whether you're Muslim or not, these Knights, these basically thugs come and slaughter everybody, maybe you're not such a nice guy, and maybe you don't see him as a holy warrior, more like as a terrorist.
So the idea of holy warrior versus terrorist is one of those ideas that comes into modern day. And if you're going to play a paladin, a lot of people can like to play paladins, I'm assuming, because they're a tank, right?
Right.
And they have, but it comes along with a price. The price is that you have to follow your code. So.
Right.
And it used to be hard, Saul tells me, in AD&D and stuff, to be a paladin. But in 5th edition, you can be a paladin. And without any problem, you don't have to, you just have to make an oath, right?
Right. Well, I think the hardest thing was, one was the ability scores that you had to have to be a paladin. And then it was the alignment lawful good. Now, 5th edition, they kind of thrown alignments to the
wind.
To the back burner, kind of, yes. And it doesn't really matter that much. Now you have this oath that you have to follow. So instead of the alignment of lawful good to follow, you have this oath. So there's a little bit more wiggle room in the oath, I think.
But it still is, if you break your oath, the GM, it all depends on who you're playing with and the party you're in, the people that you're playing with. Because some people, rules lawyers especially, will look at you and go, you can't do that because that is not what a paladin would do.
Right.
And your GM also has guidelines about if you break your oaths, then you either have to make a penance or you have to... Stop being a paladin.
So I think in AD&D, when you had to be lawful good, I remember, since I played a paladin, that you had to... You had to be lawful good all the time. It wasn't like something that you can just catch the way, throw away at a, you know, when it was convenient for you. So if you did a chaotic act, you would lose all your paladin powers, and you would have to do penance, right? Whatever that was, according to the GM. And if you did an evil act, then you would lose paladin status or your abilities, and you would just become a regular fighter. So I played a paladin for years and years. And
I don't think he was a very good paladin.
And so, but I was a teenager, right? And I just wanted those extra abilities that the paladin had. You know, he could lay on hands, which meant he could cure people. He could detect evil, and at certain levels, he could actually throw spells. And he was immune to disease around third level. And he had all these cool perks, right? So I happened to have the right score, and I'll play a paladin, no problem. But you know, I often. You know, with my party, because I'd go along with it, you know, my friends, you know, we do chaotic acts, you know, and there were certain things that Gary Gygax threw in there that were just kind of weird and funny, because, you know, it was a holy warrior, so he had to pay 10% of everything he got to tithe, right, to the church, of whatever church he belonged to. So, you know, when I was playing, we just kind of ignored that, because there was never a church that, you know, I just ignored it.
Saul never looked for a church to give the money to, whoever his god was.
And then there was this thing about you could only carry your goods, You can only have as much goods as you could carry on your person or on your horse. So, when we got high enough level, we were getting thousands of gold. It was like, okay, I'm going to transfer all my goods into gems so I can carry a vast amount of wealth on me, which is kind of going against the tenets of paladinhood or, you know, being lawful good. Or, you know, I think they're trying to make it, an oath of poverty, sort of. As long as you had nice shiny armor, that's all you cared about, and you shouldn't be worried about, you know, having a lot of wealth. Well, but I was, you know, I was a teenager. I wanted a bunch of money, and so I kind of, you know, wiggled around all these little tenets that they had. And I'm sure during my playing that I did some evil acts every once in a while, just because we were chaotic teenagers, right? But now, you know, they, like I said, they threw that away. They have these oaths, and you can even have, and they have an oath of vengeance. They have an oath of this and that, and so you can even make up your own with the guidance or the blessing of your GM, right? And so I think paladins are not as difficult to play in modern 5th edition, but because of that oath, you know, that's something that you have to live by. You know, it's a very important thing to that character class.
And paladins transfer maybe this isn't the right word. Paladins can be in other genres too. They're not necessarily the knight in modern day times, but what is a knight in modern day times? You have cops or
U.S. marshals,
priests, people. Saul says terrorists, and I have a hard time with that because I understand they might be holy warriors, but that'd be an evil one in my opinion.
Well, you know, I just, what I meant by terrorists, we were just having this discussion, and just like the Templar knights who attacked, or the knights that attacked, who went on the crusade to save or reconquer Jerusalem for Christianity. If you're on the other side of that crusade, you may not look at these knights as doing God's work, right? You know, you they're invaders. You know, you've been living in this, you know, land for years and years, and here come these knights from Western Europe, you know, very far away, and literally they, you know, and if you ever read about the Crusades, it was a massive amount of killing being done in the name of God, and a lot of looting. I mean, because that was one. I was, you know, me and Jolene are both history majors, or got our masters in history, so we were in one class, and we were reading about the Crusades, and one of the documents that we read was that when they got to Jerusalem, they kind of kept going and went into Constantinople, and they said that they had never plundered as much plunder as they ever had since when they plundered Constantinople.
That's because Byzantium or Constantinople was ancient,
right?
Ancient city, yes. With tons of wealth.
Tons of wealth. When you look at, you know, the Crusades are seen as a good thing for Western people, but people living in the eastern part of the world, maybe it wasn't such a good thing. And so that's why I use the word terrorist, because they literally terrorized the area that they went into.
So really, in modern times, a paladin is somebody with a very strong conviction. They right. believe that they are right and everybody else is wrong. Yeah. And this can translate into many things, like liberation theologists, the priests that help the people. They took up arms to keep the people from being...
Well, they fought against dictatorships in South America. I don't want to get into religion, but liberation theology is an offshoot of Catholicism, since these priests were living with indigenous people in South America.
In poverty.
And they were impoverished people. And so what happens is here he is, and they're trying to save the souls of these people who are being systematically, you know, oppressed, right? So when his flock or his people of the priests go and decide to try to fight and rebel against these dictators or whatever government, you know, whatever you want to call it, they had a decision to make. Here they are trying to save the souls of these people, and yet they're being slaughtered, you know, and abused in horrible ways. So many of them, you know, took up the AK-47 and went and fought alongside a lot of these indigenous and poor and agrarian type people. And, you know, and here, you know, is he a holy warrior? Yeah. You know, if you're on the side of the government, he's a rebel. You know, he's a criminal. So I think there's that weird dichotomy about being a paladin or somebody with a lot of conviction, right? Because you can have a lot of conviction and be totally nuts.
Yes. And but the idea was, Saul says you're not supposed to talk about religion. We're talking about paladin class. So if we offend anyone, the paladin class is about religion because they have to have an, well, maybe now they don't, they have an oath to a god, or they have an oath to a church or an order. So when you talk about paladin class, you're talking about the things you're not supposed to talk about, religion and politics, well, right? Because that's what it is.
I think, well, the you're not supposed to talk about modern day or what's happening now. But in 5th edition, they kind of changed that because they kind of stay away from the religion and say you can have an oath that comes from...
So if all the orcs killed all your family, you can swear an oath to a certain god that you're going to kill all the orcs?
It doesn't even have to be a god in 5th edition. Actually, you can swear an oath and it's to justice.
So when you talk about the Purple Knights are...
Of Cormyr, you're talking
about. Of Cormyr,
from
right.
From Forgotten Realms, yes.
They don't have a god?
Yes, yes. But what I'm saying in 5th edition rules, when you swear an oath, you could swear an oath, and the god comes second even. It says in the rules, it's your conviction to justice, it's conviction to being right, to helping the...
So then they are kind of nuts a little bit, so... I mean, anyone who plays a paladin, I'm not saying you're nuts. I'm just saying that idea.
Some people might call him fanatical. I don't know. But I remember one of my friends that plays, he hates paladins, right? Because he doesn't like, he believes a lot of people play paladins as, he calls it lawful stupid, right? Where they do the most, in the name of their class, in the name of their god, or in the name of their oath, they do stupid things. And so he says, nobody would be that stupid. Nobody would do those things. Well, I don't know about that. There's a lot of crazy people out there, and you know, I don't think you necessarily have to be crazy to play a paladin or play him like a crazy person, but you definitely got to play him with conviction, and I think that's what it comes to.
So that would be in modern times if you're playing a cop, you're trying to catch a killer, so right. Or you're trying to figure out what's going on. If you're playing in Dresden Files and you're the cop or the person who's a like a paladin like kind of person. Or if you're in space opera games, and I don't mean just space opera, but any space operas,
yes,
it could be a Jedi. Saul says there's something called a triplanetary lens man.
Oh.
I don't know exactly what that is, but I'm going to go with space knight.
So moving away from fantasy world and modern world, you know, there is the Jedi are considered knights. They're called knights. They're called Jedi knights when you achieve a certain level, right? The Lensman series is what she's talking about. E. Doc Smith wrote a bunch of books called Triplanetary and, you know, First Lensman, Great Lensman, all these Lensman books. And the Lensmans are kind of what the Jedi are patterned after, because they're these humans who achieve a certain kind of enlightenment and then they have these special powers. But their powers come from not this force and no midichlorians, which are ridiculous things. But they come from your psychic power, like your psionic, they call it psionics, which is the power of your mind over matter kind of thing. And so I think, I'm pretty sure that George Lucas or Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, I had obviously read, you know, a lot of science fiction in his childhood and kind of patterned the Jedi Knights after these Lensman guys.
I've never read this, so.
They're really small books. I mean, they're easy to read these days. I mean, compared to like, you know, George R. Martin's monstrous tomes of reading. These Triplanetary and Lensman, they're like novellas these days. They're tiny books.
So they're basically space knights.
They're space knights, right? Space knights, yes. And so, so we have knights in space. We have knights in modern times. And we have knights, obviously, in
medieval
or fantasy role-playing games. And like I said, they're all about living by a certain code. And when you get rid of the alignment problem, then it really kind of lets them be a little bit less stringent on this code, because when you have all this, when you live by a code, it doesn't necessarily have this really rigid parameters like Lawful Good did for a lot of characters, a lot of players. My wife, I've talked about our friend Dawn, who played a dwarf knight, and I gotta admit that she's right. You know, of all the players that have ever I've seen play paladins, his was probably the best, because you know he played a very convicted and convincing paladin, and he was. And he played his character, you know, he had this list of stuff that he would and wouldn't do, this code, you know, and played him great. He played him like, you know, he wasn't lawful stupid like my friend calls it, but he, you know, he understood, you know, you're trying to play somebody, a real person. You're trying to give him feelings and ideas, and nobody wants to do something that's really dumb and stupid and doesn't make sense. My friend Don was able to...
He was able to stick within the parameters of living by a code, but not doing it in a stupid way.
Right.
So he was one of the best. He's the only one that I've ever seen play a paladin that stuck within the parameters of that without coming across as a total ass. But if you're going to play a paladin, you might have to come across as a total ass, because you come in upon a situation and you're lawful good, and your compadres on in your party are trying to, you know, shake somebody down, and they're not an evil character. They're trying to get information or something. Then you might have to step in between that, right?
Right. Again, like you know, modern books, modern D&D, or not modern D&D, but 5th edition D&D does their way with lawful good, but they do have this oath. So when trying to play this character and your surrounding party is not, you know, is kind of breaking the code that you live by, do you stand by and let them do what they want to do, or do you step up and say, hey, this is not stand, as they say? Like I said, playing paladins, playing that kind of character, Jolene's right, you kind of have to be an ass sometimes to your fellow players, your fellow characters, because sometimes your players want to do something out of expediency, something quick and dirty, and paladins aren't about the quick and dirty, right? They're about what's right and what's wrong and what's just. I don't see a lot of paladins being played. I think and that's because they're difficult to play. They're difficult to abide by rules. People don't like rules, right? People like to do whatever they want to do. I think probably that's why one of the best, not the best, but the highest people pick the
chaotic good.
Chaotic good as their alignment, because it really fits among their way of thinking. You know, that they want to be good. There's no doubt about that. But they also don't like the stringentness of having to obey all these laws, right? I mean, we've talked about lawful good before, about how Jolene thinks that a lot of people are lawful good. I kind of agree, you know, but we have this rebel streak that we don't like to be tied down to these strict laws sometimes, because we enjoy our personal freedom. Lawful good.
That's why everybody always says, I only drive 5 miles above the speed limit. Because if you're lawful good, you're going to stay on that speed limit, right?
Or pretty close to it, yeah. But then you got the chaotic.
Dude, you have to be just a little, yeah.
You're buzzing at 90 miles an hour while you're trying to maintain a 70 miles an hour on a crowded freeway. So I think paladins are, like I said, they're pretty tough to play, but I think they can be really rewarding. I mean, they can really, you know, when you play a paladin and you want to play a paladin, you play by the oath that you decided to pick to play that character. Help us expand your role-playing chops.
Right? It also helps people to think about what's going on during the party or whatever the episodes that you're doing during the game, because you're going to be the conscience of the party.
The moral compass, yes. Now, I didn't play in these games, but my friend Chris, who has coined the term lawful stupid, at least in our group, he says that they would always get rid of the paladin. They're like, oh, yeah, go over there and talk to such and such while they were here torturing somebody or something like that. But because that character and that player who's playing that character wouldn't stand for the shenanigans that the party was going to. So he would, you know, conveniently leave the area and then come back and say, oh, yeah, he, you know, our witness or our information guy, you know, he didn't make it, you know. So, oh, what happened? Oh, he just died from his wounds. You know. Whatever. So there was a little bit of, what do you call it, turning the other cheek, or not turning the other cheek, but turning a blind eye to certain things that that the character would probably not would like, at least wouldn't live by that code, right? Something that would go against his code of conduct or whatever. And everybody lives by a certain code, there's no doubt about it. But paladins, on the other hand, have this, you know, obviously they have a real conviction as to how things should go.
So if you're going to play a paladin, you're probably going to want to think about how you're going to play that paladin.
Right.
If you choose to play a paladin, I don't think you're crazy, but I wouldn't do it because it would be too hard for me. I'm more chaotic than that in my normal life. Although I do live with someone who is on a white horse and judges lots of people and doesn't always come down to the rest of us. But
get out of here. Anyway, so I think playing a paladin is really cool. I think when I have seen it done right, that it's been amazing. You know, you're going to have a little bit of party conflict sometimes because, you know, the rogue may not mesh well with the paladin. The paladin may not like what the rogue is doing. But that's fine, you know, that's what role-playing is about, is being able to play these interpersonal conflicts at the same time going kill monsters and take their stuff.
If you want to be a paladin, you kind of have to expand your role-playing abilities, right? It would actually help you or make you play a certain way, which right. is not necessarily what I want to do when I'm having fun. Have to think about the whole time that I have to be lawful good or I have to do this.
Yeah, think about playing a Jedi Knight, right? You know, they're supposed to be this really learned, wise knights or people and really with a lot of power, right? And it's kind of difficult sometimes, you know, when you want to react really quickly or you want to lash out, you have to have this, you know, this
you have to be careful or you'll go to the dark side.
There's serene reserve type of sentiment or whatever, or way of doing things, you know. You just can't be this chaotic whirlwind of lashing out and killing things, and you have to think about everything, you take a lot of things into consideration, and then, you know, act wisely, right? And, you know, sometimes acting wisely is a difficult thing.
So if you want to play a paladin, I think that's cool, but I would be really hesitant to do it myself. But I've seen a lot of people do it. I've only seen one person do it really well. It's a good class if you want to be a warrior and you want to be able to heal people and you want to wear shiny armor.
And you have to have this code to live by. And I think that's pretty neat. I think fighter and a barbarian, you know, they're these chaotic creatures out there that live by whatever means necessary, where a paladin who lives by a code, and if you play him by living by a code, can be an interesting addition to any game. I think that's it. This is Gaming Perspectives with Saul
and Jolene.
And you have a good day.